An estimated 450 Regina families were on the dole in December 1914. Half were British and half non-British. Each morning, the unemployed showed up outside the Bureau of Public Welfare on Hamilton Street. An official of the Bureau stood outside on a platform and called out, "British born first." If any casual work was available, Britishers were first in line to get it. After they had been looked after, and if there were still jobs to be filled, the official called for naturalized British subjects to come forward. They were given work if there was any. Only then did the foreigners have a chance. Over 700 unemployed men held a protest meeting in April 1915 at the Romanian Hall in Germantown. The meeting was a long, drawn-out affair lasting 5 hours because the speeches were translated into 7 languages: English, Romanian, Russian, Polish, Ukrainian, German, and Serbian. The speakers said they were loyal to Canada, but they needed work and a chance to feed their families. Shouting and stamping their feet, they chanted, "Work, let us work." As the war dragged on, the economy moved into high gear and full employment. By 1916, inflation was rampant and there were serious labor shortages. "People have money and they are spending it," a Regina merchant asserted in December 1916. Farmers poured into the city the week before Christmas and spent lavishly. "The farmer today," a salesman noted, "wants the large car. He does not want to the small car at all. He wants a big car and is ready to pay cash for it." 5 Ukrainian men were arrested in Regina in August 1917 and charged with vagrancy. They had been standing on the sidewalk on South Railway Street demanding $4.50 a day to work as farm laborers. Before the war, the rate was $1 a day. Magistrate Heffernan lectured, "You men are alien enemies, and as such, you will not be permitted to hold up British farmers for absurdly high wages, especially when these farmers' brothers and sons are fighting in the armies opposed to the country from which you came. You had better go to work as soon as you leave this court." By the fall of 1918, farm laborers were getting as much as $6 a day and asking for $7. A federal government order in council in April 1918 made it illegal for any male resident of Canada between the ages of 16 and 60 to be living in idleness. 5 foreigners were arrested in Regina on charges of, quote, "playing cards for a period of 2 weeks in a public rooming house." Strikes were prohibited, socialist organizations proscribed, and foreign language publications banned. Internment camps were emptied so that the inmates could go to work and paid regular wages. For example, men from Brandon were brought to Moose Jaw in May 1917 and placed on nearby farms. The only requirement was that they should report to the local registration office once a month. The CPR hired German and Austrian women to maintain the right-of-way beside the tracks. Wearing good bonnets and plain calico dresses, they toiled in the hot sun, mowing grass, cutting down thistle, and shoveling sand. Foreigners made public declarations of loyalty to Canada. Der Courier, the German language newspaper in Regina, printed on the front page of every issue a pledge of allegiance to the Crown. The German-Canadian Association of Saskatchewan did likewise. But A.B. Perry, Commissioner of the Royal Northwest Mounted Police, doubted their sincerity. He wrote the premier in October 1914, "The attitude of the Germans in Saskatchewan is very uncertain. So far, we have ascertained that most of the Germans here are in sympathy with their native land. But I have not got any trace of any active exhibition of this sympathy." Gangs roamed Germantown on the 6th of August, 1914, throwing stones at houses and damaging fences. They tried to set fire to the house of a printer who worked for Der Courier. A family conversed in German in front of City Hall when a woman came up to them and slapped one of the men in the face. "Speak the king's English," she demanded. Germans pretended they could not speak their language. Others anglicized their names so that they would not be targets of abuse. The war was viewed as a moral crusade, not only against the overseas enemy, but also against the social evils that were said to exist at home. It was seen as a time for sacrifice and moral purification. These social reformers were mainly middle-class Anglo-Saxon Protestants who sought to fashion Canada in their own image. Even before the war, in 1908, the Scott government introduced local option, which allowed cities, towns, and municipalities to vote on whether to ban the sale of beverage alcohol in their respective jurisdictions. In Regina, the temperance cause lost by fewer than 100 votes. The holdout was Ward 1, which was Germantown, which voted 406 to 95 for liquor sales. The other five wards taken together voted 934 to 748 against liquor. Thus, Germantown swung the victory to the Wets. Foreigners and Roman Catholics had a more relaxed attitude towards drink than did British Protestants. The non-British did not see abstinence as the litmus test of social virtue. During the war, the prohibition movement and patriotism were mixed together. "It is more than hinted," declared the Ban the Bar Crusader, which is a newspaper, "that some of the bars are meeting places for our empire's enemies and breeding places of sedition. This is intolerable." Premier Scott shut down the bars in the province on the 1st of July, 1915, and all the privately owned liquor stores were replaced with government dispensaries. Then on December 11, 1916, a provincial referendum was held to determine whether the government liquor dispensaries should be closed. The newspapers were filled with stories of drunken foreigners getting into knife fights. A Canadian soldier in uniform was reported to have been assaulted at a dance in Germantown. "Here is a soldier, let's beat him," a gang of Galicians allegedly shouted. Meanwhile, British Protestant families made their way to church on Temperance Sunday, a special day set aside for sermons against demon rum. Regina voted 4,208 to 961 to close the liquor dispensaries. Even Germantown voted dry, though by the slim margin of 244 to 235. Apart from prohibition, the public school was the major focus of controversy. The school was where foreigners were supposed to learn English and the ideals of British citizenship. Conservative MLA John Bradshaw reported in 1915 that at Blaine Lake, the teacher, an English gentleman of education, had taught his class a patriotic song, which included the line, "We'll show this German bully." The children were instructed to shake their fists as they sang these words, and they soon had the habit of doing so in the faces of their German classmates. A local German ratepayer complained about the practice, which led to an investigation. George Langley, the Minister of Municipal Affairs, came to the conclusion that the German ratepayer, not the teacher, was at fault. Langley said that it was obvious that the Kaiser was a bully and needed to be put in his place. The Education Act allowed instruction in a language other than English during the last hour of the regular school day. This concession now became a sore point. Premier Scott set up a general inquiry into the school system, launched the Crusade for Better Schools, yet another crusade to engage the already beleaguered citizens of the province. The last day of June 1916 was declared a public holiday to allow local communities to discuss the topic of school reform. H.S. Lovering of Swift Current got right to the point. "The ideal of every school should be to nationalize. Here is where we must make Canadians of our children. To do this, we must have one language taught and one only. There is no place in our public schools for any language but English, and English does not include French. This is our country," he added, "and does not belong to the foreigner. In another 10 or 20 years, your Johnny and Mary will go to the polls and poll 2 votes. John Petrovsky's 13 children will walk up and outvote Johnny and Mary 13-2. We must make these 13 children into Canadians, and we must do it now." James Bryant, a lawyer who later defended members of the Ku Klux Klan in many legal cases, charged in 1917 that some schools were using Austrian textbooks and children were being made to recite, "Our emperor is the good Francis Joseph and Elizabeth is his good wife. We must speak reverently when we speak of them." Conservative supporter Mrs. Newcomb said she knew of a school where the teacher ripped up the Union flag and gave the rags to the children to wipe their slates. The National British Citizenship League was founded in Moose Jaw in March 1917, adopting the slogan, "One school, one flag, one tongue." The annual convention of the Saskatchewan Grain Growers Association called for the abolition of foreign language instruction in the schools. Similar resolutions were passed by the Great War Veterans Association and the Saskatchewan School Trustees Association. Premier Martin bowed to the pressure in December 1918 and made English the sole language of instruction in the schools. A minor exemption was allowed for French, which was permitted as the language of instruction in the first grade. All naturalized citizens, including those of German or Austrian background, were eligible to enlist for military service. Enemy alien volunteers were accepted too, though under fake identities, and they were discharged if their true backgrounds were discovered. Russians could enlist because Russia was an ally, and some Ukrainians pretended they were Russian to get into the army. One Ukrainian-Canadian soldier, Philip Konowal, a laborer from Ottawa, was awarded the Victoria Cross. The total number of Ukrainians in the Canadian Army in the First World War is unknown. However, historian Francis Swiripa states that 10,000 is the generally accepted number. Certainly, as the war dragged on, non-Anglo-Saxon volunteers were in demand. At the Rex Theatre in Regina in May 1916, Reverend George Hill of St. Paul's Anglican Church exhorted every man, whether English, Irish, Scotch, Welsh, Scandinavian, Russian, or Serbian, to join the colors. If this country is good enough for you to live in and work in, he said, it is good enough for you to fight for. A recruiting meeting held at the Romanian Hall concluded with the singing of both God Save the King and the Romanian National Anthem.